This is Doug Wells.
And I'm Larry Warren. Join us each Monday at 9 after NPR News for Mountain Money.
We've always got something you can take to the bank.
Brought to you by the Park City Chamber Bureau, Jones Waldo Holbrook and McDonough, All Resort Group, and Mountain West Bank.
Chef Merrill from Jaffel's supporting KPCW. Jaffel's globally inspired toasted pocket sandwiches are now available at two locations on Park City Mountain. Open daily at the Shack below the Superpipe and at the Red Pine Outpost on the canyon side. Real food using authentic recipes from my global travels. Serving breakfast, lunch, and après-ski. Timely, toasty, tasty at jaffels.com.
Hi, this is Stanton Jones from Silver Mountain Sports Club and Spa, a longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide our members over 80 weekly fitness classes, cardio and weight training centers, racquetball, three swimming pools, a women's-only fitness room, and a full-service salon and spa. Online at silvermountainsportsclub.com. Be stronger, live healthy, play longer.
And welcome to the post-Oscar KPCW film panel. And this is all, I guess it's appropriate, we're looking at the dream makers of the Academy and all the heartbreakers, the people that came away losing. Starting from my right to my to the end of the table, we have Stacey Domalski, a stand-up comic, director, self-published author, filmmaker. And are you officially a member of any Academy branch?
I'm a member of the Writers Guild, so I vote in the Writers Guild Awards, which are usually precursors then to the Best Screenplay Awards.
Mm-hmm. And we have Patrick Hubley, who is the artistic director of the Utah Film Center.
Hi,
nice,
Rick.
Nice to get you back in here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, are you in any Academy branches?
I am not. Apparently, programmers and artistic directors aren't welcome in the Academy.
Because you know too much.
Apparently, we watch too many movies.
Another diversity problem. Mark Harrington, film reviewer. Former marathoner and Park City attorney. So Mark is the one equipped to give legal opinions about, for instance, if helicopters were properly used at the Oscars.
Just like to be more entertaining than a Republican presidential debate.
Yes.
It's hard. That's my goal this morning.
It's hard.
I don't belong to anything. The Jerry Seinfeld camp of all awards are stupid.
The tone for the show has been set, I mean, after the last debate.
Yes. Well, I thought we'd start with just a little bit of reaction to the results, and I am sorry I forgot this year. I should have had you send me your Oscar predictions before the show, and they could have been kept in the mayonnaise jar on Price and Waterhouse's porch, and then we could unveil them this morning. But I forgot to do that, so we're gonna go by the honor system and look at some of the categories, and you guys tell me. If you thought that winner would win, and if not, what were you shooting for? So, best pitcher, Patrick, was that result pretty much what you wanted or expected?
Yeah, I mean, of the films that I saw, I really enjoyed Spotlight and The Big Short were my two favorites out of the best picture list. I honestly thought The Revenant was going to sweep, actor, director, and picture. So I was pleasantly surprised to see Spotlight, win Best Picture. I think that it harkens back to another era of film because it's really about storytelling and really about illuminating an issue, which I think is important. And I think it was incredibly well done. The performances were all strong. So I'm really happy to see that it got the recognition it deserves.
Okay, and Mark?
No, I would agree completely. I mean, obviously, I think Brooklyn got some sort of momentum a little bit as an underdog as it came out of some of the other awards, but that would have been a shock had that come up, and certainly Room started to penetrate late. But not, you know, none of those films were seen as complete films as the other. And I agree with Patrick's comments on Spotlight. I think the way the film was paced, I think, might have put off your traditional moviegoer in terms of it wasn't this dramatic telling that really focused on the awfulness of the subject matter in a melodramatic way. And it really let the investigative component in that story come to the forefront as it should have. And I really enjoyed that as well.
Yeah, and it's a guy from
a nice surprise.
Guy from the Beantown region. How'd you react to the picture?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think most people, like most people, I was unaware of the extent of the journalistic effort that was behind the stories. I don't think the Globe's gotten as much a recognition for it without the film in terms of being the first, because it swept so quickly in terms of the international kind of wave of exposing the church's problems. And so I think from just member of the public, I just, you know, credited the media more generally as opposed to the Globe and Spotlight for really doing the degree of work that they had done.
Okay, and
I was just going to add that, you know, I think just to further that, I mean, it just makes, as I was watching it, I realized how much we're lacking these days in investigative journalism. Like, there isn't, as far as I can tell, there isn't that kind of effort put in by many newspapers anymore. And I really think that, you know, we miss that kind of, you know, dogged pursuit of the truth and the story, that without kowtowing to, you know, big industries, big corporations, big entities, you know. So
or just the speed of the necessity to cut and paste. Yeah. And I think that's almost the bigger problem today.
Yeah. And Stacey, you were talking about your Oscar pool. You said you did pretty well on your Oscar pool. So this category?
Yep, I picked it. I, like these guys, I kind of thought the Revenant was going to win. But yeah. I just went with Spotlight anyway, because I did personally think it was the better movie. And I have a soft spot in my heart for journalism. My dad was an investigative reporter for the Oakland Tribune, and he actually was twice nominated for Pulitzers for breaking open. One was for breaking open a mafia case. Alioto was the mafia of the San Francisco Bay Area, which is where I'm from. And he had another one later on. And then he did write some books about some of his stories, which one of them did become a movie. And so that whole process I was a little bit familiar with when I watched the movie, and it brought back a lot of memories for me as a kid.
And so we can, what's your dad's name so we can Google later?
Jefferson Morgan.
To best actor category, what was your pick?
Leo.
Okay.
Leo. I just, you know, no matter what you thought of that movie, and it's draining to watch. To me, it's like 12 Years a Slave. You watch it, you're glad you watched it, but you're not sure if you could sit through it again. It's really worth seeing, but it's draining. But his performance is, you know, he's that guy is just getting better with age, both in all aspects of his career.
So I happen to, you know, in this area, I know another person who votes in the Academy, and he preferred another one. He kind of thought Leo was grunting for 2 hours, grunting your way. But it was grunting with nuance and depth.
It's hard to act without dialogue, and he pulled it off. You know, he had to show a lot of that emotion in other ways, through body language and facial expression and reaction, and that's harder. I know when it's done well, it looks easy, but it's harder. It is much harder than it looks, and he carried that movie.
Yeah. Patrick, best actor?
Yeah, I mean, I expected Leo or Eddie Redmayne to win, just because, you know, of the penchant for the Academy voters to pick roles that are really transformative, you know, as far as what the performer does. Of the movies that I saw, I really enjoyed Bryan Cranston in Trumbo. I thought his performance was really, that was acting to me. So
he was my second choice.
Yeah. And so I pretty much if picked Leo, but if I'd had my choice of my personal choice, I would have picked Bryan Cranston.
Okay, Mark?
Yeah, nothing new to add once Ian McKellen wasn't nominated for Mr. Holmes, which is, you know, I was out.
So. Okay. Well, Mark, best actress, is that one that you predicted?
I think everyone predicted. I think if you were in Vegas and you had any money, you would have been the dumbest person on the planet if you didn't pick anyone other than Brie Larson. Coming into this, you'd swept almost everything with, again, a couple smaller awards going to Saoirse Ronan for Brooklyn, who I really loved. I think she's still underrated. It's kind of it's hard for, I think, some of these younger women to come through their peers and recognition, even though she's certainly not new. She was kind of misperceived as new. Her prior work, you know, probably beginning for Americans anyway with Atonement and some other things, Hannah and the hotel movie. I forget the name.
The hotel movie?
Yeah. The Wes Anderson movie?
Yeah.
Hotel.
Budapest Hotel.
Yeah.
You know, fantastic. Oh, okay. And so
I was going to say Hotel Rwanda.
And I think, you know,
Wes Anderson's Hotel Rwanda.
A lot of people, kind of peg these kind of actresses with a lack of range because they come up as natural or pretty. And I think she's really magnified the roles that she's been in. And just because she played an Irish girl in this one, I think a lot of people made the mistake of she just had to play herself when she is nothing like this character. If you watch the vibrancy and the completely different personality she has in her interviews, she really came out. And the only thing I'd say, I mean, Brie, the Academy has always liked pretty girls that get dirty in a leading role. Mm-hmm. They always gravitate
Charlize
to that
Theron
role.
And yeah. Halle Berry.
Exactly. Yeah,
or pretty guys that get dirty and bloody, like Leo.
You know, I'd argue her co-star may have carried more of the film than she did. Yeah. And so, it was, given the other four choices, she clearly was the lock.
Mm. And the rest of you guys for best actress, any
other? Same. I picked her.
Yeah, I would have picked Brie. I mean, I thought Charlotte Rampling might have.
She would have been the
kind of snuck in just because, you know, again, as Mark said, that, you know, I think Academy voters have a very specific sort of type when they vote. But I also think that they would also reward actors who have been, you know, nominated or have been around for a while. And so Charlotte Rampling was she's a great actress, but I think they may have.
Which is odd because that's exactly what they did in the actor in a supporting role. You know, in terms, they went completely technical superior and the guy who'd been around forever.
And then the supporting actor, this is, you know, I think supporting actor screws up more betting pools than anything else. Mm-hmm. And for the best supporting actress, for instance, Stacey, how'd you do on that one?
I lost on that. The supporting actor and actress is what lost me a lot of money.
We won't say how much.
No, we won't. I had, for actress, I had Jennifer Jason Leigh in The Hateful Eight. Hmm. I mean, she was unrecognizable, and I saw that movie before I really knew who was in it. And so I'm watching it, and I'm thinking, who is that woman? She looks kind of familiar. And then when the credits rolled, I couldn't believe it. So I did not get that one. And for actor, I did not get that one either. I had Tom Hardy.
Okay. We'll get back. We'll wrap up just sort of our winner circle after we get back from a break. And we'll just do a little bit about supporting actor and then get off into wherever you guys want to go.
All right.
Support for KPCW comes from the Park City Film Studios and Crandall Capital. Now open for business, the studio offers 3 sound stages, 45,000 square feet of meeting and event space, and dedicated truck and trailer parking, each with its own individual power hookups. Site plan, stage layout, and more at parkcityfilmstudios.com.
Ramp is a proud supporter of KPCW. We make high-performance skis and snowboards using innovative green practices right in Park City. Ramp believes American companies can succeed in bringing production back to the U.S. by using the most modern processes. RampSports.com.
Park City Institute's 5th annual Saints and Sinners Ball beckons with devilishly good fun Saturday, March 12th at the Heavenly St. Regis Deer Valley. The St. Paddy's-inspired soiree includes dinner, dancing, music, auction, and impish shenanigans. Fly solo to polish that halo, or purchase a table of 10 for true redemption. All proceeds benefit PCI's student outreach program. Please call 655-3114. Brought to you by the not-for-profit Park City Institute, entertaining, educating, and illuminating since 1998, and a KPCW supporter.
Raindrops are falling on my head, and just like a guy's feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit.
Welcome back to the Oscar panel. And by the way, we're trying to use kind of our little intros and outros. We're trying to do a little variety of music here. But there's a quiz in that if you can, after you've heard three or four excerpts here, can you tell us these songs? What do all these songs have in common? And our special panel, they're giving me knowing looks like they already know. So. We'll give the audience a chance, but I think our panel can answer that. But just briefly, the best supporting actor, who got that one? Anybody?
Those were just no. Out of the out of left field.
Yeah, I mean, I think that category could have gone in any direction, to be honest. But I was happy to see Mark Rylance win. I mean, he's more of a theater actor, so you don't see him as often either on TV or in film. But, you know, I saw Wolf Hall. He played Cromwell in Wolf Hall. And his performance in Bridge of Spies was a good one. So,
yeah. Mark?
Yeah, no, I agree. I was pleasantly surprised by this choice because I do think that role in that film in particular, where there was so much else to be distracted by, that he really took over every scene he was in, and you're like, wow, this guy is that guy. And Sylvester Stallone, I mean, come on, it's not even close to his best work, just because there was that nostalgia aspect and that he didn't have to play the lead and he was able to make fun of himself shouldn't be enough.
That the odds on him were high.
Right.
He was kind of the front runner.
But I'm glad it wasn't,
because
it just, if you compare that to his performance in Copland, you know, it's not even close. So, he shouldn't have won.
Yeah, with all the comments about, the aging of the Oscar audience, it's interesting that, you know, when these supporting categories come up and there's some supposed sentimental choice, which Stallone obviously could be, seems like most of the time the so-called sentimental contender doesn't win. So, remember when there was categories with Lauren Bacall in supporting or Gloria Stewart of Titanic? You know, if an old geezer audience voting, that they're not making their choices, you know, in the supporting. Jumping to some other things, do you guys want to talk a little bit about, you know, how the show was as a show, or you want to get to the elephant in the room?
Oh, let's. Well,
I think it could be both.
Like, yeah, I was going
to
say
it's really one conversation
it is.
To me. So I'm happy to talk about the show and the elephant in the room. Personally, I thought it's the first show actually in a long time that I watched all the way through. Usually, I'm puttering around, you know, and I have the show on in the background. But for some reason, I was more engaged with this year, and I think it was because of the controversy around this year's show that kept me watching.
Yeah. Well, I guess that opens up a two-part question. Is number one, are Oscars so white? And number two, how did the show do in handling that question?
Well, I mean, I'll jump in just for, you know, because from the law perspective, I can give you some of the facts. I mean, I think there's two things going on, and one is about access to film, and one is about voting of the Academy. And I think some of the criticism that, hey, you're putting a little bit too much emphasis on the voting of the Academy, as opposed to the access to filmmaking and roles. And I think that's fair. However, the Academy's, you know, kind of makes its bed, it's got to sleep in it. And I think there's been other articles that have shown, you know, over the past decade, the actual voting for people of color in the acting categories has been almost 10%, which is higher, you know, 10 times higher than any of the other categories, which have been nearly zero. And the Academy, most people don't know it. It is secret. You don't know who's a member. It's by invitation only. It's about 6,000 people. It's whiter than Utah. It's 94% white. I think Utah is 93%. So, you know,
whiter than Utah.
Whiter
yeah.
than Utah.
Great slogan.
So, you know, in terms of just statistics, it's 77% male, 86% over the age of 50, and has a median age of 62. Now the Academy is addressing that. They're phasing out if you haven't done something in 10 years or something. Yeah. They're going to address that. But you've got a barrier to entry. You have, and then the broader role is, I think, you know, Pat Conroy passed away, and there's been a lot of publicity this morning on him. And he has this great quote about attributing the real core of the meaning of and the power of art is its connection to people. And the Academy has to know that they can't connect to people without representing people. And it's not an obligation or this empowerment thing. Certainly there's all those other agendas, but there's just plain fact you're not going to reach the core of your audience, which is it has changed dramatically. And you can read the other statistics about Latino and who makes up the market. So I think the financial pressure alone and the connection to audience will mandate a change on its own, but the degree of access is going to be harder fought. I think there's such an institutional sort of club in the industry, and that's where the real challenge is going to be to break down.
I totally agree. It's a mindset that needs to be changed, and I can give you a good example. So I'm currently right now in pre-production with two films. So I'm a producer on these films, and you know whether they go the distance, you never know. But they bring me in as a hired gun, as a glorified project manager. After watching Chris Rock and all the hoopla and reading about it, I honestly thought in one of these projects, you know, there is a role here that I think we should make that a person of color. And I hadn't thought about that before because it just, you know, the scripts come in, you're like, okay, here they are. But when you think about it, it would open up a whole new area of interest and a whole new dimension of the subject matter in this story that makes it a little more multi-layered. And that's the mindset of the thinking that needs to change is that the world is, you know, even the United States, we're not this homogenous one, you know, it's a blend of people, and that's what represents everybody. And I think Chris Rock's, when he did that montage, or when he went out in the street and he was asking people of color about the different movies, they're like, are you making these movies up? I haven't seen any. And then he mentioned Straight Outta Compton, and they're like, I've seen that. Yeah, that's great. You know, so I got a little tired of it during the telecast because I felt like it became a one-trick pony. He was funny, but it almost was like every time he got up, he felt he had to touch on that. But you know, it is what it is, and I think that we have to address it.
Patrick?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that's been said. I mean, I think it's, you know, the reaction to the Academy Awards this year is a reflection of what's going on in the industry as a whole. And I mean, I think this is just, you know, it's one of the most visible opportunities to highlight the lack of diversity in Hollywood and in filmmaking. So I think that it's an opportunity that, you know, was well seized. But I also think that this has been brewing for a while. I mean, if you think about last year, we had similar, you know, situations with Ava DuVernay and David Oyelowo not getting nominations and similar sort of rumblings, but not to the extent. So I think that this has been something that's been on waiting to happen. I think that, you know, the Academy, if they want to stay relevant, and I guess we could have an argument about how relevant the Academy Awards actually are.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's 6,000 people, you know, who've worked in the industry over the last whatever, however many years. And, you know, I don't know. It's, I have this kind of ambivalence toward the personal ambivalence towards the Oscars, but, you know, things have to change. And whether, and to me, that's not just about the Academy being relevant, but Hollywood being relevant. You know, the, our society, our culture is changing. And I think I'd like to see the numbers or the diversity be more reflective of, you know, films that's like what we see at Sundance, when there's a lot of films made by women, a lot of films made by, you know, people of different cultural backgrounds. And I think that that's where the industry as a whole needs to go.
Yeah. Well, this topic raises a lot of questions, but you mentioned Sundance, and I think during Sundance, I think that the question was kind of politely directed at John Cooper or Robert Redford about diversity, and and they didn't come out and say, yeah, well, we look over the list and make sure we got the proper number of gays and women and black, and but what they said was, well, we look for good stories and we look for independence and then the diversity just magically follows from that, and so why can't Hollywood say, look, we're looking for good stories, and we're looking for people that will make us a buttload of money on opening weekend.
Oh,
the color we're prejudiced in favor of is green.
Yeah.
Well, that you answered your own question.
Can they just say that?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why they're not looking at good stories. They're looking at stories that'll make money, whether they're good or not. So, I mean, you know.
Well, they said, you know, we're looking for the one level for the stuff that'll make us butts, and the other level the stuff we can get awards for and pat ourselves on the back.
Right. They want projects that will take the least amount of marketing effort, and that would be to produce something that has done well before and has big-name stars in it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they can take something like The Big Short, which did not come out of the gate gangbusters, but they had a good marketing campaign for it. And it does have name stars in it, but it's a tough topic to watch. Mm. And so, you know, it just depends on how much they want to put on the back end to promote that movie versus, well, if we just pick something easy, it'll just snowball on its own.
It's part of a franchise or something.
Right. Mm. Well, we were talking before we got on the air about the new Ghostbusters movie. Mm. And, you know, I'm going to go see it because I love the story from 30 years ago. And I know those. I don't personally know them, but I'm familiar with those actresses. Boom. Done. Yeah. They got my 10 bucks already.
Yeah. Well, of course, Stacey has danced with one of the people who was nominated for an Oscar last night.
I thought about that.
We'll get to that later. But, I mean, in terms of the interesting thing about, you know, the Chris Rock, you know, on, man on the street in Compton and talking, two interesting things. One, when he was throwing out the titles and getting the blank looks, he didn't mention Mad Max Thunder Road. Interesting. And in terms of going to, if he went out on the street in Boise and talked about Trumbo and Big Short and Revit, he might get blank looks from the white people too. Mm-hmm. And maybe the problem is that the Oscar winner, the Oscar nominees were not very relevant to a whole range of people, and then could it explain why the ratings were hit an eight-year low. Patrick.
Well, I think that comes down to a question of what's, you know, what is the Academy rewarding? You know, I think it was really interesting to see how many awards Mad Max Fury Road won, considering it was, you know, a huge box office success. And typically the Academy is not rewarding that kind of film. So, you know, I mean, is the Academy about artistry and where does that blend that artistry and box office success mix? I mean, I don't know. It's a tough question. I mean, I love Mad Max. I thought it was like an incredible production. I was entertained. I enjoyed the reimagining of, you know, that series, but You know, I don't know. It's a tough question to ask.
It was getting interesting, and it started to look like it won about six in a row.
Yeah.
And I was they might as well just set up a little table by the stage, a few daiquiris for the Mad Max.
Yeah, the best part was with, I think, one of the short introducers was said, and the winner is Mad Max. No, just kidding.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed all those, basically Mad Max won most of the technical awards that were presented, costume, and I enjoyed seeing them accept their awards, I thought it was great.
Are we developing a path where maybe the craft and technical awards kind of the avenue for the popcorn movie of the year to win?
Star Wars got one this year. It's kind of funny that Mad Max won for best makeup and hairstyling, and Charlize Theron was bald through the whole thing.
Yeah, I thought about that. If you look at, and then I thought about the costumes and that sort of post-apocalyptic, era. I thought it was cool, but I loved when what was the award that she walked? She had the leather jacket on. What was that award?
It was the costume.
Yes,
costume.
And she looked like she was going to coffee, which was great.
I don't know. Yeah, I have seen some articles that said that stirred consternation. I don't know.
Well, I read those too, and I'm like, why did that stir consternation? Because you can see her walking down the aisle, and everybody that she's passing, no one's clapping. I couldn't fathom what was going on with that.
I mean, so she does look like she's dressed for Sundance, but what's wrong? Mark, your thoughts on, is it something that the Academy can do to make itself relevant in terms of diversity or to the entire audience or what?
Well, I mean, I think it is a complex issue because you got a number of things going on, and I think the relevance question is more acute right now. And I think the Academy is this weird blend of the public's perception of that's frankly a little more focused on populist entertainment value. And then you have this internal industry peer recognition component and whether those two align. And then you throw in artistic critical success or merit on top of it. And I think that's why it's almost stayed relevant by nature of its controversy, and because it forces the question in the intersections of those three areas that embody the fascination of movies, because it's the one medium that really comes across those three areas at a confluence when it's wonderful when it's all together, but more often than not those three worlds collide different ways. And I think that's the fascination with the system. And so I think in terms of when Redford said during Sundance, I don't think about the Oscars. I didn't really believe them at first. But then afterwards, this year, notwithstanding its entertainment value as a spectator sport, I came away after that. And this was the first one. I was like, if I were in the industry, I'm not sure there'd be much, I'd be in that camp all of a sudden. Yeah. I'm not sure I'd pay that much attention to it in terms of a career goal or aspirational. From the outside, I'm obviously fascinated by it, but I don't think if I was an artist, I don't think it would be my goal.
In terms of the all-important thing to get an Oscar, but the people that won Oscars 40 years ago, went back 40 years and looked at that particular year, what films do we remember?
Well, Gone with the Wind and The Wizard of Oz. And, there are some classics, The Big Sleep and stuff like that. But you're right. For the most part, they fade into a sea of obscurity,
Yeah, sometimes they 1975, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, still.
It's relevant.
I think the quick answer before we go to break is right now it's a marketing relevance,
right?
And that's overshadowed the real
Absolutely.
Commentary of trying to hit the substance of any of the other issues. It's become a marketing tool for leapfrog as these films, you know, decide on their release dates and how they get pushed after mm-hmm. the awards or nominations, more mm-hmm. importantly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll be back in just a moment with our Oscar panel and talk about Oscars. Do they change your life?
Wyndham Vacation Rentals is happy to continue our support for KPCW and the Park City community. Wyndham Vacation Rentals has been in business for over 30 years in nightly vacation rentals and property management with a range of services for our owners and guests. 649-6606 or online at wvrparkcity.com.
Join KPCW with Leadership Park City on Monday, March 14th from 7 to 9 p.m. for a live broadcast from the Jim Santee Auditorium featuring a panel discussion of women in leadership. KPCW's Leslie Thatcher will moderate six accomplished women discussing the changing role of female leaders today. Listen live on Monday, March 14th from 7 to 9 p.m. on KPCW. Made possible by Miller Law Group, providing solutions for divorce, criminal matters, and all things legal. MillerLawUtah.com.
Wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report every weekday at 6:50 and 7:50 during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher. Brought to you in part by Meyer Gallery, Esco Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electrical. That's Esco, E-S-C-O, and Cushman Wakefield Commerce Commercial Real Estate.
And we're coming almost up to the end of the Oscar hour. You have a little chance to answer our trivia question, which is our musical excerpts. What do they all have in common? The answer is not, by the way, music that is played in elevators. No, it isn't. That's not it.
Well, that could be, but it's not.
Yeah. And we'll have these guys give you the answer toward the end of the hour. But you were talking about impact of Oscars, and I noticed a magazine cover that said Brie Larson is about to become the biggest star in Hollywood. And, getting even a Best Actress, does that immediately, you know, does that actually make you a star? Does that mean you're a star?
I don't think so, but isn't there a curse of the Oscar? Like, didn't, like, Halle Berry win an Oscar and then... After that,
there
kind
seems
of
to be,
she
yeah.
faded.
Yeah.
They, you know,
the movies they choose to make after their Oscars yeah. tend to be dauds.
Well, the pressure's on. There is a saying in Hollywood: "You're only as good as your last movie."
Yeah.
And so, you know, they really want to make sure that they pick something the next time that's going to propel them. I think the people that become the big deal are the people who are nominated over and over and never win. Uh-huh. I mean, yeah. Look at Leonardo DiCaprio, Paul Newman. Paul Newman finally did it at some point, but look at all the times he was nominated. So these people are hungry. They keep picking projects that they think are going to propel them, and they're not getting the schlocky script offers, because once you win an Oscar, they want you to be in the next Ghostbusters 2 or 3 or 10 or whatever, because they think that movie is going to be seen by a lot of people. And ergo, that person will be seen in that movie. So I think you have a better chance of becoming a big deal if you've been nominated two or three times and have not won.
Yeah. I mean, I put less of it on whether you won the Oscar or not, but just making good decisions. I mean, if you win the Oscar and you suddenly get a slew of big money roles, I think you have to, and I think that's what, those people that are getting nominated repeatedly they pick good roles. You know, I think of Cuba Gooding Jr. after winning the Oscar, then he made the movie about the dog sled team, which, I'm sure had an audience. But, I think that it's just about decision making. I don't think the Oscar should have an impact on whether or not you become a bigger star.
Go ahead.
Well, I just amplify on that. And I'm going to, get a kiss from Stacey after this, but I think there's a divergence in terms of where you win an award because of good writing. And and you fulfill that, and you still nail it. And there's, but you're a victim of a great project or the reward of a great project versus somebody who really knocks it out of the park from an artistic and performance. And those people tend to build upon the awards because they tend to have, you know, I think a better opportunity to. And those, I think others, and you see some that are very appreciative. And I, whether it be, you know, a Joe Pesci giving a 2-second, you know, award acceptance of speech for Goodfellas or something else, you know, there's people that recognize they were part of something larger. And the ones that really knock it out of the park, I think, go on to continue to knock it out of the park. And I, Jennifer Lawrence wasn't a one-off. And, you know, she's going to have a long and great career. I think you're going to see Saoirse Ronan, you know, continue that trend. You have a number that have never won, but they continue to knock it out of the park. So, yeah, I don't think it's, you know, I think it helps more than it hurts. But I think, you know, coming from Boston, I'll go back to the, you know, when Matt Damon and Ben Affleck won for their screenwriting, you know, they're like, wow, it's going to suck not to win, but it's going to be really scary to win, you know. And I think that holds true for, you know, a lot of the actors and because it that expectation is hard to live up to, but the good ones prevail.
Well, I just wanted to say, it kind of builds on what you said, Stacey, you're only as good as your last movie. I think that, you know, you're only as good as the material you have to work with. I think that that's the starting point, you know, and I think good actors will take good material and make it
do something
great,
you know. So, you know, and I think this the question of does an Oscar make the actor go on, it's true with movies, too. For example, there have been years best film was Crash, The Full Monty. And those movies won Best Picture, and they if you asked my 18-year-old son about those movies, he'd have, and he's a movie buff, he wouldn't know who they are. So. Yeah.
Sorry, Crash is on the top of my list as one of those moments of like, really, that one compared to some of the other films
of that year.
We made some time later on for the your nomination for the blank was robbed category.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot. There's a long list actually.
Oh yeah, but there's a lot of interesting categories in terms of actors winning or not winning Oscars. The greats that are now dead and never got Richard Burton, Peter O'Toole, and Leo winning. I'm not sure it's his greatest performance, but it was one of those about, it was sort of the, you know, it's about time that we gave it to him, Oscar. Maybe rarely, I think, is where an Oscar transforms somebody's career. I mean, Walter Matthau in The Fortune Cookie, and elevated from supporting actor to star, and George Kennedy, who was, you know, became a kind of a B level star, at least out of the character actor ranks. But a lot of them, you know, there's the F. Murray Abraham Award. like Mark said, what mattered was the script, and it was a fine actor who got the perfect script for him and the perfect character, and he went to town with it. But in terms of finding, you know, other parts later, you know, not so much.
Well, it's all things have to come together. It's that convergence that Mark was talking about earlier. It's the total package. You know, when lightning strikes in a bottle and you get good direction, good acting, good material, and it just, that's when it's fun to go to the movies and see something like that up on the big screen.
Yeah. Maybe if we can turn just a little bit to kind of moments in the show and the stuff that... the stuff that didn't work for you, stuff that did. I kind of liked the thing where they inserted black performers into some of the movies of the year.
That was so funny.
Reminiscent of Billy Crystal. Some of the stuff that didn't work for me. Some strange joke in which they brought out the only black woman conservative in Hollywood.
What was that?
Stacey Dash.
Yeah.
The audience is going, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, that didn't fly.
Yeah, but Mark, you know, high points and low points
for
you.
Well, I won't. I think you're covering the specifics. I just think it's still a puzzle to me why the greatest, certainly the highest profile award ceremony can't do better. The Emmys always knocks it out of the park, even though it's easier to do, you know.
And the Golden Globes
Golden
are
Globes,
like.
But it's just,
it's cause
hire some good writers. Do.
I think there's alcohol.
Do.
The audience, there's got to be some sort of polling afterwards, right? Mm. So, they love the flashback moments. They love seeing portions of the film, and every year they seem to, steer away from the things the audience likes the most. And a lot of it's on the host, but I don't know that that needs to be the case. And so I just, it is a mystery to me why it's not a better show.
I think expectations are way too high for the show. I think award ceremonies in general are not that interesting so I think it's really hard to do that. But, I think that this show, Chris Rock, considering, the everything that was going on, I think that overall did a really good job with it. I wanted to see more of Jacob Tremblay, the young star from Room. He was like the highlight of the show for me when he saw C-3PO and R2-D2, trying to step up and get a better. I could totally relate to that,
Yeah, even when they bring him out for live action short, and they put him on a box.
But did you hear what he said to Chris? I loved you in Madagascar. That was the best cutaway line of the whole show. I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
But he's a charming young man, and I wanted to see more of that. But
human moments.
Yeah. And whether that was scripted or not, or rehearsed, having those types of moments to me is what would make the show more interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's just so hard. Everybody gets up there and does the rote thank yous and mm-hmm. the scroll this year. I'm not sure what that was about. I feel like there's a human element that's taken out of it because of expectations.
I was going to ask you about that. Seemed to be a yet another attempt to be efficient, where they were having the scroll of people that they wanted to thank.
Right.
Only a lot of them got up there and thanked a bunch of people anyway. Mm-hmm. And
almost everybody was played off this year. More were than weren't.
It seemed like Leonardo, DiCaprio, had 5 minutes on stage to do his thing. Do they give different amounts of time for different categories?
Some of the major people didn't seem to have the scroll.
Right. And then when Iñárritu went up, he talked right through the walk-off
music,
and they stopped.
I thought that was great. Awesome.
And I loved it when they go overtime and the music selection is usually Ride of the Valkyries. Yeah. And I was waiting for the Uber chopper to come in and shut them down.
I know. It's like, who picked this music? Getting to your human moments, there's been a lot on the internet of flack for it, but I actually like when Chris Rock sold cookies, Girl Scout awesome. Cookies, and people were pulling out hundreds and, literally taking three boxes of cookies and giving the kid a $100 bill saying, keep the change. And I'm assuming it was true that they raised $65,000. What's wrong with it?
He missed an opportunity, though, because he could have been like, hey, in the hood, this would have been, this whole vote scandal would have been 5 to 10 years. Here, it's a white collar crime. Therefore, you only have to do community service. Buy some cookies.
Well, they did anyway. I liked that. I thought, oh my gosh, is he really selling cookies? He is.
Yeah, I wasn't sure where that was going when he started it. And so, I guess that's the thing. The show itself seems to take itself way too seriously. And, they're entertainers. And, they're artists and act, but at the end of the day, they're just not be so serious about it.
Well, in that same vein, I was happy to see Ally G make a brief appearance as a presenter.
I was excited to see him. I wasn't so excited afterwards.
They kind of clipped his wings. Yeah. So I was, when he walked out, I was like, oh, this is going to be good. But then nothing really happened.
Mark?
Well, I think the degree of professionalism given in the speeches often tends to correlate to some of the individual's future success. You know, I'm always amazed at how many people just get up there and they just go for the, oh, I'm so surprised and I have to, you know, I'm sure there's a contractual element in terms of who they have to thank for certain things. But the it just seems like there's a number of performers that always do really well at being showing some grace and professionalism in delivering their speeches. Nicole Kidman comes to mind. This year, obviously, what's his name?
Mark Rylance.
Yeah.
That was
you know, and the Europeans tend to be a little more, you know,
articulate
than us lowbrow Americans. But
did you think that there was a lot of? I mean, it seemed to me, as we were thinking and talking about diversity, and you brought up like the European, it seemed to me that there was a lot of sort of non-American winners this year. You know, all the Mad Max crew, like they were all mostly Australians. Mark Rylance. I mean, it just seemed to me, you know,
a lot of Irish.
Irish. You know, it seemed to me that there was a lot of sort of international diversity in the winners, and even the, I guess some of the nominees, but not, you know.
Well, I'd be telling it. I'd be curious to talk to somebody from the production side and see if there's a correlation on that, because I think, you know, in terms of funding and how really good quality films are made, there's a lot more avenues, I think, internationally than there are if you have to contend through our traditional market,
yeah.
Right? So I think you're seeing that as, and again, there's that divergence between quality and popular entertainment, where there has been a self-correction in terms of some, you know, of the diversity of marketing, because there's a lot of money in a more mm-hmm. diverse movie making. You've seen it, everything from Star Wars to the Fast and Furious filming. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the numbers behind Fast and Furious, it is unbelievable. And so, you know, that will start continue to dictate, you know, some access. But in terms of the smaller films, there were a lot of small films in these awards.
Oh, Brooklyn.
But they had support from mm-hmm. non-traditional, you know, non-market sort of forces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, when you do a movie like in Australia, you tend to hire Australian crew and local, and then if they win awards, they're the ones that go up and accept the awards, yeah. Hence the accents.
and a bunch of Australians going to a party with booze afterwards, that would have been fun to watch.
That would have been a party in and of itself, a performance.
And certainly, you know, we are getting to the point where one or two films out of Sundance are prospects for the Oscar.
Birth of a Nation is going to be next year's
best picture. Got a strong inside track right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, Rolling Stone headline for their movies section on that week was Sundance votes color. So, I think it's going to be, well, it's a good movie, so it's deserving of whatever it's awarded. But I think that it has the perfect lead in this year from Oscar So mm-hmm. White,
yeah.
And now here we are with virtually, except for Armie Hammer, a person of color cast.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, just about to wrap up, but just real quickly, sorry, Patrick, but just to remind folks, the Tumbleweeds program is not this spring.
Yeah, we've moved it our Tumbleweeds Film Festival to September, but you know we're already starting to plan, and we're really hoping to be able to bring sort of a mini event up to Park City. So we're just working on finding the funding and support to do that.
Yeah. And Tumbleweeds is?
Tumbleweeds is the Utah Film Center's annual film festival for kids. So basically Sundance for kids. And, you know, we also programmed the Sundance Kids section. So we'll be showing foreign and independent films for kids, foreign up.
Okay. And much thanks to our smart and articulate
Oscar. Are we going to give him the answer to the question?
And all of the songs are actually songs that have won Oscars for Best Song. Mm-hmm. So
I thought they were or could have been made better by being covered by Amy.
Possibly.
Well, the first one, Moon River, I think is the opening song in Amy. Amy.
I don't know if... Amy could probably do Last Dance pretty well. But Mark Harrington, Patrick Hubley, and Stacey Domalski, thank you for being there.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning.